Well, happy Friday, everybody.
You don't sound too happy. Come on.
I'm still shell-shocked.
Shake it off.
I gotta shake it off. Glad to be here, though. Very glad that it's Friday and that it's 5 p.m. Happy hour, folks.
Double happy hour.
That's exactly right.
5 p.m. on a Friday.
Don't get better than this. Glad to be here. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, my co-host, Heidi Morales, Ryan, to bring you another hour of American Hit Radio. However, on Friday, we switch it up a little bit. We change the topic to How Music Changed, where we cover some of the most important events in music history. And some topics just take a lot of shows to cover.
Apparently a lot of them do with you.
Yeah, apparently you're right.
But, I mean, we are covering only the really important stuff. So, I mean,
why give it short shrift?
Exactly.
You know, do it right. And our topic for the past few months has been to cover the British invasion. And it's been great fun. I'm having a great time doing this. This is actually show number 17 on the British invasion. The best thing about doing this is that it's our most diverse show for the Fridays, because usually we're focusing on one specific artist and we have nothing but music of that one artist, which is always great. I love
Motown,
doing it.
Motown was pretty diverse if you use that.
Absolutely. That's totally. In fact, that would have been like the other series that would have, you know, that was kind of like easy to get through because it was so diverse.
Well, if we ever do Phil Spector, I guess that will too.
Yes, and we will be doing. Oh, actually, we did Phil Spector, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we already did cover. We did two shows on Phil Spector.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
I don't know. We may have given him short shrift.
Well, see that? Sometimes we can get it done in a short number of shows.
Okay.
But that being said, I think what kind of happened is as we moved along through our series and got more involved in it, the shows became more involved and convoluted. For example, this is show number 17 dedicated to the British invasion. That's a lot of shows.
Yes.
And I decided to even
extend it. Well, it just goes to show they didn't just invade overnight and take over. It took a long time.
Yeah, and well, basically, it sort
they
of
didn't
did
really
invade.
Take over.
It sort of did invade overnight and take over, actually, back in 64, but it stayed around for a while, and its influence lingered. And right now, the music that we're going to be covering in today's show all comes from the spring of 1967. This is pretty much the stuff that was being released just in time for the Summer of Love. At which point you might have presumed that the British invasion might have already more or less run its course. And yet, we've got two bands on today's show that debut for the very first time on the top 40 in America from England. And they're definitely bands that are considered part of the British invasion. So, of course, we need to keep going. We're probably going to go past 1967 into 68 for that same reason, because there's still a lot of things that were really considered part of the British invasion, per se. So without having a specific stopping point yet, I'm happy to say that. I keep extending it. I'm glad to see that we can go right up to the Summer of Love with this program and start with another band who actually this isn't their debut. We played one other track by them. Might have been our previous show, maybe two shows ago. Talking about the Spencer Davis Group. Of course, Spencer Davis Group featured Muff Winwood on bass and his brother Stevie on organ, who was also singing at this point. And what's really funny is the track that we're going to play is called I'm a Man. And Steve wrote it. He's one of the writers of the song. But as he's singing these words, he is not a man. I mean, the guy's a kid, or, you know, he's about 16 years old.
An adolescent.
Imagine this. This is a guy who's not even like, not even old enough to drink yet. And he sounds this authentic and incredible. I mean, this is some piece
good,
of work.
Ryan.
You tell me. Here's the Spencer Davis Group featuring a teenaged Stevie Winwood singing I'm a Man.
Thank you.
well? Does it pass muster?
Yeah, it was pretty good, actually.
Pretty awesome, I think.
I was thinking that you wouldn't even know when exactly it was recorded except for the reference to the Groovy Chicks.
I'll tell you, man, at this time in 1967, there was hardly anything coming out of England that was as funky as that track.
That was pretty darn funky.
Yeah, it's just, that's just really authentic sounding rock and roll, blues, R&B. It's just real. And to think that Stevie Winwood is basically the machine driving that with that great organ sound and that voice of his, something else, man. That was their follow-up hit to Give Me Some Lovin', by the way.
They got some funk in the water in London, I guess.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, there's definitely a lot going on there. So. Now, the other band that basically had very late to the party as far as the British invasion goes, one of the reasons why I knew we had to extend it further was for the Hollies. Because they were really not even a part of our conversation until about show number 12. They didn't reach the top 40 here in America until very late in 1965, where they barely scraped on with Look Through Any Window. And it wasn't until the summer of 66 when Bus Stop reached the top 10. And they had another follow-up after that, which was Stop, 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 which also reached the top 10. This song is the follow-up single to Bus Stop. Am I saying this right? No, excuse me, to Stop, 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 excuse me.
Uh-huh.
And just missed the top 10, stalling at number 11. You're going to recognize the lead singer's voice on this track quite plainly, though, especially if you're a fan of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, because this is quite obviously Graham Nash on lead vocals on this track, as he had written it as well, called On a Carousel.
Riding along on a carousel, trying to catch up to you. Riding along on a carousel, will I catch up to you? Horses chasing, 'cause they're racing, so near yet so far.
Go quick fade on that one, boy. That's the Hollies.
Not messing around.
You're not kidding. Graham Nash providing some hit material for the band on that one. Although already, even though it's kind of funny, because even at this point in his career, Graham Nash looked like he was kind of chomping at the bit. In retrospect, we know this now, to try to do something that was less blatantly commercial. He wanted to do something. He felt like the Hollies hit formula was not quite as cool. And when he ended up going to San Francisco, I think, for the Monterey Pop Festival, actually Monterey, for the Monterey Pop Festival,
mm-hmm.
and seeing what was going on over there, I think it began to turn a few heads, and he began to think about what he would be doing with his career from that point forward. But another person who was changing things and being very affected by what was happening on the West Coast of America was Eric Burdon. Now, he had already more or less ripped the band apart, mm-hmm. the original Animals.
Yeah, he hated it.
hated the fact,
all the material, all those hit songs.
All those great songs. And he puts together a new band, calls it Eric Burdon and the Animals, and actually kind of manages to prove his point, though, when he ends up getting a top 10 hit with C.C. Rider, reasonably good cover version of that track.
It's okay, yeah.
And then he had a number 29 hit with a song called Help Me Girl, and then he comes back with this, which actually did fairly well, reached number 15 on the charts, although it hasn't been remembered very well, so I'm curious to know if you'll recognize this when you hear it. Eric Burdon and the Animals performing When I Was Young.
The rooms were so much colder then. My father was a soldier then, and times were very hard when I was young. When I was young, I smoked my first cigarette at 10, and for girls I had a bad yen, and I had quite a ball when I was young. So much stronger then. I believed in fellow men, and I was so much older then. When I was young, when I
All right, that's, of course, Eric Burdon and the Animals, a song that I don't remember, but you do. How about that?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I know, in fact, when I downloaded this song for the show, I was like, oh, I don't remember even knowing this song. So there you have it. Actually, it wasn't bad.
I guess you just don't get out much.
Right. Let me remind you, you're listening to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, my wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, helping me stay on track. And you can hear us here on the station every Wednesday and Friday at 5 p.m.
It's a dubious job, but someone's got to do it.
I get to have all the fun, but you get to chill and have to suffer with me as I try to convey all this information.
I have to stand behind the scenes cracking a whip at you.
Right.
Mush, mush.
Stay on topic. I can remind everybody as well that if you're interested in our program, not only can you hear it here live on Wednesdays and Fridays at 5 p.m., but we also take over shows and eventually post them on our website. So you could go there and check it out and hear the shows whenever you want to hear them in case you just can't get to the radio or whatever. It's really simple. Just get on the internet, do a search for American Hit Radio. As simple as that. I'm sure we'll be the first thing that comes up on whatever search engine you're using, and just click on our website and there you'll have it. Right on the very top of the page, our Wednesday show is on the left and our Friday show is on the right. You can scan through the shows and play whatever show you want on demand. Just find the show you're interested in and click on it and it'll begin. So how about that? That's American Hit Radio for your search, or just go to AmericanHitNetwork.com. Really simple. All right. This show number 17, Heidi, around this time, just in the spring of 1967, just before the Summer of Love, I have to admit, some of my favorite material from the British invasion is in this very program. We've already touched on a couple of them already. I mean, that Spencer Davis track, I'm a Man, is definitely one of my favorite songs from the British invasion. And the song by the Hollies, On a Carousel, is no slouch either. But there's one song that always stands out really as one of my favorite hit singles of all time, and it's this track, which is in a way a bit of a reach to say that it's part of the British invasion, because the band is considered as being Australian, which is really a half truth. They were all together when they met in Sydney, Australia. That is true. And but the lead singer is from England, the bass player was from the Netherlands, as is the guitar player. Harry Vanda, he's from the Netherlands as well. Well, George Young and the drummer, Snowy Fleet, were both from Scotland, England. In fact, Snowy Fleet was actually raised in Liverpool, was a member of the Mojos. So you're talking about, you know, around the time of the Beatles.
Okay.
So all of these, you're talking about pretty much
so
an English band.
So it's not that much of a stretch.
Right. They're really a bunch of English guys that had relocated to Australia. Now, they became huge in Australia, one of the
it's the new land of opportunity,
and it was I mean, they became the number one rock and roll band in Australia as the Easy Beats. They had a huge number of hits, none of which transferred to America. They must have had about a dozen hit singles, being the number one band down under, and we had no idea who they were until around this time. Just for this single, actually, they start working with producer Shel Talmy. Now, Talmy is the same guy who was producing The who we haven't heard from yet either, and The Kinks. So the guy knew how to make a hit. And it turns out that these guys also knew how to write hits, because this is, in my opinion, one of the most well-constructed pop songs, maybe of all time. All-time fantastic classic rocker by the Easy Beats. You know it. It's called Friday on My Mind.
Monday morning feels so bad. Everybody seems to nag me. Coming Tuesday, I feel better. Even my old man looks good. Wednesday just don't go. Thursday goes too slow.
I'm not afraid.
That's about as close to a perfect pop hit rock and roll record as you can imagine. I mean, it's got everything. It's awesome energy, really strong riffs.
Power pop.
It never lets up.
At its best.
The tempo is awesome. It's just so cool. And it's got this great dynamic. The vocals are awesome and strong. And how those guys ended up being one-hit wonders is totally beyond me. I can't imagine.
Hey, there's no accounting for taste.
It's just so weird. Or maybe, you know, it seems like, you know, the hits just maybe dried up for them after that, because
maybe
being introduced to America like that
writer's
was something
block
else.
Kicked in real bad.
Now, the funny thing is, like, the two main songwriters of the band, you know, Vanda Young, Harry Vanda and George Young, excuse me, went on to become... We just got a phone call, actually, from Mark in Floral Park. Thank you for reminding me of this, Mark. They went on to become producers because their kid brothers started to make records. And since their own band was no longer in existence, but they had a lot of experience as rock and roll stars in Australia, they were perfect candidates for doing the production mm-hmm. for their kid brothers. So they started, you know, doing all the work that they possibly could for Malcolm and Angus
yes.
Young, who obviously are now AC/DC. So George Young was their older brother, and it was George who was like the main leader of the Easy Beats, just in case you didn't know that. All right, now we go from like basically the sublime to the ridiculous, really. As great as that song was, this next song is kind of like totally ludicrous. It's hard to believe that it even became a hit at all, but it actually did. Let me see, this song charted.
Some things defy logic.
Yeah, this one definitely does. This reached number 20 on the pop charts. What it really was, it was just a simple thing. It was like a record producer named Noel Walker, who's fooling around in the studio. He made a silly 2.5 minute record that he whistled his way through. And when it was done, he didn't know what to call it. He originally called the song Too Much Birdseed. And they said, maybe I'll come up with something. Then he came up with the title, I Was Kaiser Bill's Batman. That's how the record was released. And he needed a name for the artist because he didn't want to use his own name. And it turns out there was a vaudeville artist named Whispering Jack Smith. So he just, as a play on, I guess a bad pun, he called himself Whistling Jack Smith. So this is it. Number 20 hit as a result. Whistling Jack Smith with I Was Kaiser Bill's Batman.
It had a false rock and roll ending.
A dose of the ridiculous awesome. There. Do you remember from like the 60s, the Benson and Hedges commercials?
No.
The Benson Hedges cigarette commercials. It also had like a whistling. It's got dum 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 dum.
No.
Something like that. Anyway, I this sort of like brought that to mind.
I don't remember any like TV cigarette commercials, to be quite honest.
Yeah, they're hard to bring them back, I guess, memory-wise, because they've been gone for so long. But this track was obviously a product of its time as well, something that is probably very forgotten. And if you were around and listening to pop radio, you probably have heard this before, but you probably haven't heard it in a very, very long time. Whistling Jack Smith with I Was Kaiser Bill's Batman.
It's a ridiculous title,
totally
too.
Totally ridiculous. Now, I was talking about, like I said, you know, taking the British invasion into the Summer of Love might seem crazy, but let me ask you something. I mean, if I was going to say, do you think it's even possible that you could adequately cover the history of the British invasion and never even play The Who?
I don't know. It's weird.
Of course not. The Who were a huge part of the British invasion,
sure.
Right? Well, so far,
we
haven't
from
played
them.
Anything by The Who. Not a single track.
Yeah, but when they hit, it's going to be...
Well, actually, that's just it. You wouldn't believe the way it went down. I mean, they've already been having a huge number of hits, and they're hits that we know by heart, but none of them were even like...
No one had any interest in releasing them here. The record companies, the execs,
I'm
guessing.
They were being released, but they weren't being promoted, so they suffered. Check this out. Here's why we didn't hear from The Who yet, because we're at least listing the tracks that we're covering, we're limiting ourselves to top 40 hits.
Uh-huh.
At least got to be that, preferably top 20. And that's what really 95% of what we're playing is top 20 hits.
Uh-huh.
Now, the very first Who single to chart in the UK was I Can't Explain. Great song, right? Went to number 8, top 10 in the UK. In America, number 93.
Whoa.
93. So, okay, that didn't count. We had to skip that one. Now, that would take us all the way back. Had we been covering it, that would have been all the way back in March of 1965. So The Who are obviously...
So people like me that are Who fans had to obviously do a lot of backtracking and just find stuff that wasn't very popular by The Who.
All of the stuff that we now know by The Who, everybody in America was backtracking. Everybody started backtracking really around the time of, like, pretty much Tommy. Because the stuff, or maybe after Magic Bus came out here in America and songs like I Can See for Miles, then people began to backtrack. But, I mean, all of this stuff was basically exclusive to England. Like I said, I Can't Explain number 8 there, number 93 here. Although now everybody knows the song I Can't Explain, right? Anyway, Anyhow, Anywhere. Top 10 hit in England. Number 10, in fact. Here in America, never even charted. Didn't even exist on the pop charts. My Generation.
Classic,
by The Who.
Obviously.
Do you get more classic rock and roll than that? Number 2 hit in Great Britain. In America, number 74. That was the best it ever charted here in America. So, move on. Then Substitute came out. Another classic song. Huge in Great Britain. Number 5 in America, never charted.
Well, that's because the hippies didn't have enough angst.
I think they were just perceived as being too English, but... I mean, their rock and roll energy was, I don't know, I can't make excuses. I really just don't get it. A Legal Matter came out after that, number 32 in Great Britain, never charted here. Followed after that, The Kids Are All Right. That didn't do well in either place. It went to number 41 in Great Britain and number 106 in America. This is The Kids Are All Right.
I know, but you needed more Gen Xers to start getting it.
So this is like seven hits into their career at this point. And it wasn't the Gen Xers. It really was the hippies who eventually got it. It was the hippie generation.
The hippies, the ones that were older, that were cusping on Gen X, the ones that became the early punks, those are the ones that were getting it.
The thing that really broke The Who in America was Monterey. Just like we were talking about. It was yet another band that we talked about Eric and Bird and the Animals.
Yeah, that's how a lot of people... broke was at Monterey.
It was that West Coast thing, and this is like where The Who really began to get a reputation for themselves here in America. But, you know, I'm a Boy was a number 2 hit again.
Uh-huh.
This is their 7th single now, their 7th hit single in Great Britain, and it didn't even chart here in America. It wasn't until this song, all the way in basically just before the summer of 1967, that they had something that reached the charts in America. It's the very first hit in America. So I apologize for not playing all that great material by The Who. When I cover The Who, of course, I'll be talking about how fabulous those songs are and how important they are, but the fact of the matter is, none of that stuff was a part of the British invasion at all because it was never a hit. So it's stunning. I mean, to cover it would have been a lie because America simply didn't hear that stuff during the British invasion. Fact of the matter is, the very first time we heard The Who and they reached the pop charts, and so they were getting some general airplay, was with this track in the spring of 1977 that eked its way up to number 24. How generous. The song, Happy Jack.
Happy Jack wasn't old, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the Isle of Man. The kids would all sing, he would take a wrong key. So they rode on his head in the furry donkey. The kids come to Jack, they drive, drive, drive. They drop things on his back. Stop Jack or the waters lapping. Then they couldn't prevent Jack from feeling happy.
Such an incongruous entry into the American pop charts for The Who, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not what, I don't think what most people remember them
for. That's just it, exactly. I mean, when we reinvent...
When you think of them, yeah.
You become a Who fan at some point in time. Say in America, you became a Who fan around the time of I Can See for Miles. Let's say you got into them really early, and that did set you up to want to go back, and then you discover the songs like Kids Are All Right, My Generation, and I Can't Explain, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
when does Quadrophenia come out then?
73 or 70, much later in their career, much later. But at that point, they were already huge, as post-Tommy, of course. And Tommy is the thing that basically made them
so they still
legendary
had a lot
in America.
More hits in them, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty coming. There's plenty of great material still ahead of them at this point. But the fact is that in America, we tend to rewrite that history because by rediscovering the earlier Who, because these albums got recycled and they came out as like
again,
Meaty, Beaty, Big and Bouncy, which had all the hits on it. Magic Bus was really also a compilation. These were not English albums. They didn't exist in England, but they were American compilation releases of their hits. And this is how we eventually got into the band and then considered them to be part of the British invasion. But all of this stuff, quite honestly and truly, was coming out in 1967, 68, or later.
Right.
So they did really miss the first
they missed the bus.
Couple of waves. The first, yeah, definitely. The huge one in 64, they had no part in that at all. And 65, nothing. 66, nothing from The Who here in America. It wasn't until 67. And I find that stunning. And that is why we are still continuing, obviously, with our coverage of the British invasion up to this point.
Yes.
Now, I said we had a couple of other bands that we still had to basically, you know, that would be debuting at this point. Same thing with this band.
Here it comes.
Yet another and another track that I consider one of my favorite pop songs of all time. This is really just a matter of two guys getting together to form a songwriting duo. And they were having a lot of fun doing it. Their names were Gary Brooker and Keith Reed. And they, just by just writing together, they eventually built up a pretty decent body of songs. And they didn't have a band, to record any of this stuff. So they put an advertisement in the British newspaper called Melody Maker mm-hmm. to see if they could find a couple of players. And they got a bunch of guys together and they made their very first record. It was like a really weird, surreal poem that was written by Keith Reed. He had no real idea what it meant, but you know, it's, and Gary Brooker wrote the melody for it. Actually, and his melody was actually based on a song, on a classical piece by Johann Sebastian Bach. There's an Air on a G String, is what it was called, or the Suite Number 3 in D Major. So we used that melody to put Keith Reed's poem to work. Now, they get signed to a label, Derham Records, and Derham is happy with the recording, and they decide that they're going to release it. But just before it comes out, Derham realized that the Moody Blues had a record to be put out at this exact same time. It was their version of Nights in White Satin, which, by the way, didn't chart in America yet either. That took 4 more years for that to be a hit in America. It didn't, and that was a big hit in America in 1972. So there's yet another song that missed the boat. But they knew it was going to be a big deal in Great Britain, so Derham decided to hold back on the release of the record. However, what's interesting is that Radio London, the offshore pirate radio station, got a copy of this song by Keith Reed and Gary Brooker and started playing it all the time. And then they got deluged with phone calls. Everybody heard it was saying how much they loved the song. John Lennon went on record saying that it was one of his favorite songs of all time. Huh. So now all of a sudden, Derham had to release this track pretty much as almost as competition against the Moody Blues song, which is exactly what they didn't want to do, because Derham, from that point forward, got labeled as being a progressive rock label. Because both of these bands were considered to be very progressive, using orchestration and stuff for their time. Well, so here it is really funny is you get these two guys, Keith Reed and Gary Brooker, with a huge hit and no band to play it because it was a pickup band that they had used to record the songs, and they couldn't even go out and promote the song live. But it was doing so well on the radio that hardly mattered. A song that still sounds as wonderful today, Procol Harum with A Whiter Shade of Pale.
Best so virgins were leaving for the coast. And although my eyes were open, they might just as well at first just go sleep, turn the wider shade of fair.
It's about another track, which you don't get much more classic than that either. A song is timeless and as definitive for the summer of love as any song I could possibly think of. That and the Beatles' All You Need Is Love. I mean, those two tracks are all that you need if you want to basically try to evoke the spirit of the summer of love. Play them back to back and there you have it. You're almost back there. You can almost feel it, smell it. It's incredible. With that track being released in England, finally, when it did come out, it did go all the way to number one, and they became one. That only happened 6 times in England up to this point, where a debut artist, their first single, went to number one. Don't forget, not even the Beatles did that.
Huh.
Because the Beatles' first single was Love Me Do. That barely, I don't even think it reached the top 20 in England. So for them to go to number one with their first single was a big deal. Now, of course, they have to put a band together. So they ended up recruiting players, and they eventually pulled in some pretty awesome band members, including B.J. Wilson, one of the more dynamic drummers that I can think of in rock and roll. Really interesting drummer. And Robin Trower was their guitar player. They brought in Robin.
Classic rock guy.
Right, exactly. So that is eventually what Boko Haram became after that track was recorded. Now, somebody else we've been covering an awful lot of during our pretty much the entire series of our program, going all the way back to 1964, and somebody who we've been giving occasional short shrift to, which is unfortunate because I'm a very big fan of hers, is Petula Clark.
We're not giving her short shrift. We've given her tons of coverage.
We are. You're giving her a ton. Yeah, but I mean, we don't always give her credit for having, you know, the best of material, but this is...
I don't.
True. You don't, because I definitely have been trying to defend
yes,
her. And
you
I will
do.
Go I will go out on a limb again and say this is one of my...
Oh, that's the first, though. That's the first we that really meant you that's me. That's weird for you.
See? I'm learning, I guess.
Anyway.
Well, anyway, Petula. Exactly. It's just great because Petula Clark, she's back in the top 10 with this track. In fact, all the way up to number 5. And if you were going to ask me my favorite Petula Clark song, I'd probably pick this one. This show is so full of some of my favorite songs from the British Invasion, no doubt. So my number one favorite Pet Clark song happens to be Don't Sleep in the Subway.
Disagree, 'cause to reason is not what you care for. Try to be smart, then you take 'cause it hurts when your ego is deflated. Ooh, you don't realize that it's all compromise, and the problems are so overrated.
Thank you, Petula. That's a great song. What a wonderful melody that song has.
Out of all her songs, I probably tend to agree that I like this one a lot, only because it's just so whack. Who's going to sleep in the subway? I mean, well, given a choice.
It's a great love song. That's exactly it. It's like, I don't know, I love that. It's like basically, okay, you had a fight and you're out and you don't, you know, you're not going to, you don't know where you're going to go. You're not going to sleep. You're not going to get a hotel room. You're going to just walk around the city, and your pride is keeping you from going back home to the person you just stormed out with. And she feels bad about it, and she's saying, don't sleep in the subway. You know, don't get on a subway car and just ride around the city because you're too proud to come back home.
Oh.
You know? Just
okay.
Come back home. And that's a great sentiment.
Oh, I should sing that to you occasionally.
See how I understand that song so well?
I know. Now I get it. It comes full circle.
There's no secrets on this radio show.
And so I turn.
Oh, boy. Well, once a reminder, you're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with Heidi Morales, your co-host, my co-host, covering.
Ew, I'm not Heidi Morales, Ryan, suddenly.
Did I not say Ryan?
Freudian slip.
Yeah, look at that. Well, you are listening to us cover the British invasion, and this is show number 17, which finds us just on the brink of the summer of love. So all these songs are being released in the spring, which means they're getting a lot of airplay during the summer. And we have yet another band that debuts in this show. Like I said, so much of my favorite material. One of my favorite bands growing up as a kid was the Bee Gees. If you know this show, if you've listened to the show a lot, you've heard me.
You know that Tom Ryan loves him some Bee Gees.
Oh, man. I was like, I remembered for one Easter, my parents gave me the Bee Gees' first album, and I just had it memorized. I loved it as much as any Beatles
record.
What
was the first album?
What it was called Bee Gees First.
Oh, okay.
Just the name of it. And it had so much great material on it. To Love Somebody.
Oh,
and,
yeah, that's a great song.
And Holiday. And
I remember when you made me my first CD, and it had Bee Gees songs on it. And I said, oh, no, he pulled the Bee Gees card to my roommate.
Because when they're romantic, they're very romantic.
Yes.
But they're also very weird, no doubt about it. For example, backing up just a little bit, this is another band that came out of Australia, much like the Easy Beats. But they, you know, most of their hits were very local in Australia, nothing particularly huge. They weren't a huge Australian band, although they did have some TV appearances and some, you know, I guess chart hits in Australia. They decided to come to England, where they knew that they would have a better chance of getting famous. I mean, after all, that's where the Beatles were, right?
Yeah.
So they're literally on the boat with their parents, sailing from Australia to England, when one of their songs becomes huge in Australia, like a number one hit. The song Spicks and Specks becomes a huge hit for them. So now they land, and Robert Stigwood becomes their manager and decides to record them. And the three brothers, Barry, Robin, and Maurice, all start writing material. And one of the first things they come up with is this really weird song about a mining disaster in New York.
I love that song.
There wasn't a mining disaster in New York. The song is called New York Mining Disaster 1941. And it's a total piece of fiction. And it's like these guys are writing about America as though it's this imaginary place. It's what they did with the song Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they had any idea of what these places were like, but to them it was just very fictional and romantic and right. So it, you know, this isn't, you know, West Virginia mining disaster. It's New York mining disaster. It doesn't matter because the song basically kicked off their career. And if you were listening to the radio back in 1967, this would have been almost certainly, if you were an American, your very, very first opportunity to hear anything by the Bee Gees would be this, their first hit single.
In the event of something happening to me, there is something I would like you all to see. It's just a photograph of someone that I knew. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside? Don't go talking too loud, you'll cause a landslide, Mr. Jones. I keep straining my ears to hear a sound. Maybe someone is digging underground. Or have they given up and all gone home to bed, thinking those who once existed must be dead? Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside? Don't go talking too loud, you'll cause a landslide, Mr. Jones. In the event of something happening to me, there is something I would like you all to see. It's just a photograph of someone that I knew. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside?
You see, you can really feel that there's a huge tidal change happening with music, with all of the stuff that we're playing in today's show. The Bee Gees, Barry was 19 when that track came out. The twins, Robin and Maurice, were only 17.
Wow.
And, you know, Andy, who would become a star later on, was too young to be in the band. That doesn't even matter at this point. But what was beginning to happen is, you know, as pretty much as children, their idea of writing songs was really to do this fictional, you know, vision of what things were like in America.
Stories.
And yeah, very epic and melodramatic. I mean, everything they did was about drama. As we go forward, you'll see that that's more or less the case. They have songs about being on death row, and you know, it's incredible. And the main thing that I guess that got to me with what they were doing and what made music change so much, you'll notice, in fact, there's a trend really with what's been going on in today's show, is that there's a lot of orchestration. These songs are no longer just four-piece rock and roll bands, or even five-piece rock and roll bands kicking out, you know, some tracks with the occasional piano overdub. This is full orchestration. This Rococo type of arrangements, you know? And that was just... it just really lent an air of importance to what was being done in the studio. And I know as a kid, it's definitely because of the Bee Gees that I have to admit, I have a very deep love for orchestrated pop music. When pop music incorporates orchestras, I usually love it. It's just something about it. And I, you know, for better or worse, I blame the Bee Gees
for that. I just love when they sing about mining disasters. It's like Timothy.
Yeah, yeah. You had another song about a mining disaster. Exactly. That's funny. All right. We've got just a couple more minutes left, I suppose, here. So we'll just go ahead with one more track. A band that we're probably not going to be hearing very much of anymore after this track. In fact, let me see if they come up again. Maybe, but probably not. Yeah, this might be the very last time we hear them. Now, we've been playing them for something like 16 tracks. and they've been in the top 10 almost every single time. At one point, they were the rivals for the Beatles and the Stones. Certainly in terms of sales, they were absolutely that. But now the writing was on the wall. You could just see what was happening with all this other stuff, and the Summer of Love music had changed much too much for Herman's Hermits.
Yeah, they're very Anglo-centric.
At this point, yes. Yeah. So this is them pretty much beginning to lose their hold on chart positions. This song faded out at number 18, and it'll be the last thing we get to play for you today, folks, and I hope you can join us next week. Have a great weekend. Meanwhile, here's Herman's Hermits with Don't Go Out in the Rain, Sugar.
Don't go out into the rain, you're gonna melt. Sugar, I know. Come and sit here by the fire for a spell. Sugar, how? Please take your shoes off and make yourself comfortable. The weather's miserable. Just begun.
She's got to go.
No. Please don't go. Don't go out into the rain. You're gonna melt. Sugar, I know. Come and sit here by the fire for a spell. Sugar,
The house is ours now that everybody's gone.
Just begun.
She's got to go.
No. Please don't go.
Don't go out into the rain. You're gonna melt. Sugar,
Come and sit here by the fire for a spell. Sugar. Why don't you wait?
It's after one.
We've just begun.
She's got to go.
Oh, no.